Okay. Hi, everyone. Good evening. I want to begin tonight's session by looking at a story that Eihei Dogen, who was the person who founded Zen in Japan, liked to tell, a story that he brought back from China. He took a ship to China, practiced Zen in China for a number of years. And when he felt like he had gained some, sort of realization of what Zen was really about, came back to Japan and started teaching there, and basically initiated the school of Zen that's now known as Soto Zen, which is the tradition that I practice in. So a really hugely important figure in the history of Buddhism, especially the history of Zen Buddhism in Japan. And there's a story that he would tell often in different talks that he'd give. And let me just put it on the screen. Short, but sweet. When priest Yao Shan was sitting in meditation, a monk asked, "What do you think about sitting in steadfast composure?" Yao Shan said, "I think not thinking." The monk said, "How do you think not thinking?" Yao Shan said, "Non-thinking." Dogen would tell the story on a number of occasions and included this idea of thinking, non-thinking, in his instructions to his monks about how to practice Zazen, and gave it sort of pride of place in those instructions. So this story encapsulates something that Dogen felt was very important about the practice of meditation. And this idea of non-thinking is at the heart of, I think, what he was trying to get across by sharing this story. So I just want to, before we begin meditating ourselves tonight, just pause a little bit over this story. Okay. So I think one thing that is, I think, really important to emphasize in what this story is and is not sort of saying, is that it is not saying that we should somehow stop thinking, right? Yao Shan does not say at some point, "I stop thinking," right? Or "I don't think," you know? He says rather, "I think not thinking," and then how you do that, non-thinking. And not that non-thinking is clear at all, like what that means, right? But he could have very easily have said, "I just don't think," or "I stop my thoughts," or something like that. "No, I totally clear my mind," or something, you know. But he doesn't say that. I think that's really important to take in, right? He's also not saying, "I just think," you know, "I just like just daydream," or something like that. So it's not thinking. I mean, so he Yao Shan isn't just thinking, isn't just daydreaming, isn't just like the or just engaging in conscious, deliberate thought, right? But he's also not saying, "I have stopped my thoughts," right? Rather, he engages in what he calls non-thinking. Getting the feel, here, let me stop the share so I can see everyone again. Getting the feel for what this term non-thinking means is the most sort of important thing to do when we are learning how to practice meditation. It's something that is very difficult, I think, to communicate in some kind of way that would be like just simple instructions that someone could follow. Though I'm going to, you know, I think you can get close, but you can't really get there. And you can lead people up to it, but it's an experience that basically just one has to have. And it it can be really like hard to figure out what the heck it's supposed to be like, right? This idea of non-thinking, you know. It's something that, you know, we talk a lot about here on Tuesday night, so I don't think it's like radically unfamiliar to people in this group. But I just wanted to like sort of approach it just from another angle tonight, right? So, I mean, essentially, I think what Yao Shan and what Dogen are saying here, right, is that somehow when we're sitting in Zazen, when we're sitting in meditation, the idea is that we can adopt a relationship to our thoughts where we're not identified with them. We're not thinking in some active way, but we're also not spending our energy trying to still our thoughts, right? We're not trying to stop thinking, but instead we're trying to adopt a relationship to our thoughts where we can be aware of them, but we're just not engaging with them, right? How can we sort of allow the thoughts to be there, but not actively be thinking them, right? Just seeing thoughts arise, seeing thoughts go away, right? And just like being aware of that, right? But not sort of buying into the thoughts, right? Not believing them, not identifying with them. So I think this is what Yao Shan is saying when he's says non-thinking. How do you think not thinking? Well, by non-thinking, which is kind of like, you know, it's like a twist on this ordinary idea of thinking. How can you just cultivate a certain kind of awareness of thoughts? And so I think it's worth emphasizing, I think, over and over again, because it's such a tempting thought for people, that this is not about like quieting the mind, right? It's not about stopping one's thoughts. One can practice non-thinking even when the mind is racing, right? Even when the mind is caught up in intense emotions, right? One can still adopt this kind of attitude towards one's thoughts, where one sort of sees that the mind is really like whirling, swirling, like, you know, and yet you aren't necessarily like identified with that kind, with that thinking, right? So when we practice awareness and when we do things like follow the breath, it's really, I think, important to have in mind this sort of broader, I would say much more essential sort of characteristic of genuine meditation practice. Because like think about this like really common sort of moment in meditation where okay, you're sitting and you're following the breath, and maybe you're counting the breath, anyway, you're feeling the breath, and you know, you're sensing the sensations of the breath and nose, and okay. Oh, wait, okay, I'm thinking about that thing that I'm supposed to do tomorrow. I really don't want to do that, right? It's gonna be a difficult conversation, and you get caught up in that and you say, oh wait, okay, go back to the breath. All right. Now, in that moment when we go back to the breath, so think about how much is happening there, right? There is already an awareness, like you've got become lost in thought for sure, okay? But then there is this kind of moment of metacognitive awareness where you become aware that you're thinking. Otherwise, you'd never be able to, like, you wouldn't even know to go back to the breath, right? And so you are aware that you are thinking. So, you know, people often say, oh God, I can't meditate, like, you know, I keep getting lost in thoughts. But every time you are aware that you're lost in thought, you're already practicing meditation, you're practicing mindfulness. I mean, that is a metacognitive achievement, just to know that you are lost in thought. And people often don't give themselves enough credit for that, you know, ability. It's huge. You probably know people in your life who are not at all aware that they're lost in thought, right? They just are their thoughts, you know, and the thoughts just come right out of their mouth, or they act that right. And so, we should really be giving ourselves a big pat on the shoulder, pat on the back, for just being aware that we're lost in thought. So that is a moment of metacognitive awareness that is a crucial part of meditation practice and a kind of core skill that meditation practice done regularly cultivates, right, and strengthens. Okay. But then we're aware that we're lost in thought. So, okay, oh God, I'm thinking, okay, bring it back to the breath. This is the moment where I think a lot of people can go just a little bit off in a way that's just small, but actually really consequential. They can think that somehow the point of the practice is to stay with the breath, you know, as if like somehow not getting pulled away by thought and really being able to stay with the breath is the thing that we're trying to get better and better at. And so, and a really good sitting is one where we can just stay with the breath the whole time, you know, and not get distracted by thoughts at all, as if there was something really magical and special about just staying with the breath, you know, constantly, you know. Now, there are forms of meditation where the explicit goal is to stay focused on the breath. But in Zen practice, as you know, it is a preliminary skill. It is not the purpose of meditation practice to stay focused on the breath. It's the way that everyone is first taught to meditate, because unless you can have a bit of concentration, you're just going to be lost in thought all the time. But the real reason we use the breath as an anchor in the way that we usually do, and that we like sort of try to notice when we're being pulled away from the breath, is because that sort of monitoring of the breath is what allows us to have that metacognitive awareness that a thought has pulled us away. Okay. It is that awareness that's actually the key thing, not the breath. The breath is a tool that we use to cultivate the awareness to know when we are being lost in thought. All right. So I think that's just really, you know, a good thing to just remind oneself of. Because, you know, even people who've meditated for a long time can like fall into the trap of thinking that somehow meditation is really about quieting the mind. It's really about staying focused on some kind of object of concentration, like the breath or like something like that. Okay. In some traditions, that's the case. But in Buddhist mindfulness practice, it is not, you know. And when you sort of get that, when that really sinks in, and you realize that thinking is actually, the point is not to get rid of your thinking, right? Then you start to realize that, oh, an anchor like the breath, or sometimes we use two or three anchors, like we use breath and sounds, or breath and like sensations in the body and sounds. So I'm like, okay, the point of all of that is to create a kind of awareness where we can be aware of thoughts and yet have a way to not be pulled away by them into just trains of daydreaming. Okay. So, and if we didn't have the anchor, that would be just much more difficult to do. There is a form of meditation practice called open awareness or choiceless awareness, or objectless awareness, where you actually don't have an anchor at all. And the point is simply to be aware of moment by moment the passing nature of experience. And so you say, okay, there's a thought, okay, sensation. I mean, you don't have to say this, I mean, you're aware, like thoughts.
Oh, sorry.
Great. Okay.
Wait, hold on. Yeah, good.
That's very difficult. It's a very difficult kind of awareness practice, and that's why I almost always encourage us to use an anchor or two or three anchors, right? And then once in a while, when you're practicing in that way, you may slip into a space where you realize, okay, I actually don't need the anchor. You know, like the breath is there as part of my experience, but I don't need to follow it. You know, I don't need to like stay focused on it. Like I can just sort of be aware of the breath. I can be aware of thoughts. I can be aware of sensation, et cetera. But I'm just like not getting lost in anything. I'm just aware moment by moment, you know. This is something that I think, you know, people can slip into for little periods of time, but it's a very difficult state to stay in. And then once you lose, you know, your awareness, once you start getting lost in thought because you don't have an anchor to return to, you end up just often spacing out and just, so that's why I think having a method is very, very useful. So even though in a way, the sort of objectless awareness, just open awareness, is probably the way that I would describe like the essence of Zazen, the essence of what I've called at different times Shikantaza, just sitting practice. I think it's actually much more realistic, much more practical to actually still have an anchor that we're using. So anyway, just sort of, okay. But the point of the anchor, again, is not to stay single-mindedly focused on that. We use the anchor to help us cultivate this kind of awareness where we can see when thoughts are arising and maybe kind of hooking us, pulling us away for a bit, but then where we can just say, okay, don't need to go with that. Or I can just see that thought. All right. Now, there's, I think, when we're starting out with this kind of practice, and I think at times, no matter how long we've practiced, there are these moments where we will be aware that we're having a thought. Okay, like for example, this is frustrating. We're like, I can't do this right. Like I'm not good at this. Okay. And you can feel this kind of like tension, tightening up. Okay. We can be aware of it. And being aware of it does not feel sufficient to not be identified with thought. Like the thought is going to pull us in no matter what. Okay, like we're hooked in by the thought. Like we can be aware that we're having a thought and we're just identifying with it anyway, and that's, and for moments like that, that's when I recommend the practice of noting or labeling. You can say like thinking, or like having a thought, I suck at meditation. Like this is frustrating. Okay. Using a notation or a label like that can help us create a little bit of distance between us and the thought, just a little bit of cognitive space. Just because, like as I said, like having the thought I suck and having like saying to yourself, having a thought I suck is just like there's just like a subtle difference there, right? It's a difference that can introduce just a little bit of space. But we can still feel like sort of, I still believe the thought. I just feel them saying, I still believe it. And then contrast that with an experience where you can see that you're having a thought like, I'm no good at this, right? And we just see that thought. And the awareness of the thought allows you just to not be caught up by that, not be identified with it, so that the thought can be there and then it can move on. Like it's there, but it's not like a big deal. It's not a thought that necessarily you are sort of believing in that moment, right? That is the experience of non-thinking, right? But the thing is that there is no way, no predictable, what's the right way of like, no kind of instruction. There's no instruction you can follow to make that happen. I think, and this is why I talk about the feel of non-thinking, right? Like it's such an important thing and such a delicate thing. How do you get that, right? Awareness is all that is necessary for us not to be caught up by the thoughts that arise during Zazen, right? But sometimes it doesn't feel sufficient. Sometimes the thoughts are going to be sticky anyway, And all we can do in those moments is just notice that stickiness. Be aware of what it feels like to be caught up by that thought. Because if we try to somehow sort of create the experience of non-identification, say, no, okay, I want to get that. I don't want to believe that thought. Like, that's a thought. I don't want to identify with it, right? All we're doing is just creating more thinking around that thought, right? And like, it's almost like we're now, this whole ego project is arising where, like, because I don't want to believe this thought, so I'm having these other thoughts about the relationship I should have with this thought, you know? And then we create a kind of inner battle between one set of thoughts and another set of thoughts, like the meditator in me, like now in conflict with the other thoughts I'm having while I'm meditating. So it's just like the proliferation, different kind of thoughts and different kinds of identification, different kinds of beliefs. That may happen anyway. You might see that kind of drama unfolding as you meditate, but try not to consciously engage in that kind of inner kind of conflict or battle. Just notice that the thought's there and notice that there's some stickiness around it. Do it regularly, practice in this way regularly over time, and then you will experience moments where just seeing the thought is enough to dispel the power that has the gravitational or the magnetic power it has to draw you in and make you identify with it. Okay. And that is the experience of non-thinking, right? But that's the crucial thing of how that's what we are practicing as we sit zazen, right? We're practicing, how can we sort of be with our thoughts and not identify with them? The only way is just to be aware. To be aware of what it feels like to be identified, see that, and over time, more and more we'll start to get this experience, oh, I just see that thought arising, and I don't identify with it. Joko Beck, this teacher, once, you know, someone asked him, what do you do when you're meditating? What do you do when you sit? And she said, I just think. You know, I think this was her joke, you know, because I think what she was saying was like, I don't do anything special. The mind does its thing, right? Thoughts just go, they come, they go, right? There's nothing I need to do. We're just being aware, right? So we're just going to sit, we're going to practice, you know, dual awareness. Are there any questions that people have at this moment? Because I think what I want to do is for us to sit. Afterwards, I'd love to like for us to sort of share our own experiences of what it feels like to be in relationship to our thoughts in this way, or at least to, you know, kind of attempt it, because it's not always going to feel that way, right? And that's okay. This is not, you know, you can't make this is the thing, like you can't make it happen. It's not something you can do. It's a kind of state of just awareness or a state of being that like you can create the conditions for yourself to fall into. But the frustrating thing about meditation is that you can't make it happen, you know, and that's, and the more you try to make it happen, the farther away you get from it. And that's what's so it's almost like you just have to try over and over sometimes to get frustrated and realize, okay, I can't make this happen. And then people often notice that it's like at the moment when they give up trying, that suddenly they can experience this, oh, this is what it was all about. Just like sitting here, just being aware, you know. Okay. So any quick questions before we start the practice? In some way, I don't feel like I've been saying anything in the last few minutes that's like new. You know, this I've just been saying, we've been talking about this like in different ways over and over again, right? So it's just a different, slightly different, like, you know, slightly different angle tonight. Okay. All right, cool. So let's do it. Just get in a comfortable position. Maybe just take a few deep breaths. Really feeling your whole body fill up with air. And exhaling slowly through your slightly open mouth. Really drawing the exhalation out nice and slow. Just take a few more of these deep, slow breaths. And after your next exhalation, let your mouth come to a close. Just begin breathing in a natural, easy way through the nose. No longer sort of managing the breath in any way, just letting the breath come and go at its own rhythm, its own pace. Where do you feel your breath most easily, most naturally? Do you feel it the rise and fall of your chest, or the belly, or the nose? Just let your awareness rest wherever the breath feels just easiest to follow for you. And just feel the sensations of the breath. And of course, things will pull you away from the breath, your thoughts, sensations, emotions, feelings. That's natural, inevitable. Just each time you notice that you have lost track of the breath, just take note of what has pulled you away from the breath. Just gently acknowledge that and then gently return your awareness to the breath. As we follow the breath, just think of what we're doing not as a way to stop our thoughts, but as a way to observe how the mind works without getting lost in its workings. Thoughts, feelings, perceptions are not a problem. Just notice how they arise, what they're like. And then just come back to the breath. Let your awareness of the breath be soft and open. I'm not trying to have a laser-like focus on just one tiny part of our breath or the body. Let your awareness be open so that as you follow the breath, you're also just aware of your whole torso, your body as a whole, just breathing. Sometimes when we're following the breath this way, the body may be tense, the breath may feel tight, it may feel uncomfortable. We may feel like I'm not doing it right, it's not feeling good. Remind yourself this isn't about it feeling comfortable or uncomfortable. It's not about being good or bad. Let your experience, moment by moment, just be what it is. However it is. As you continue following the breath, please include in your awareness the sounds in the space around you. At first, it may be hard to keep the sounds and your breath in awareness simultaneously. If that's the case, then let your awareness move gently, leisurely back and forth between sounds and breath. And just once in a while, I'll see if you can hold breath and sounds and awareness at the same time. But it's okay if you can. Sit like this for 10 more minutes without any guidance for the final 10 minutes of this sitting. Be silent. Just once in a while, check in with yourself. Are you hearing the sounds around you? Are you feeling the breath? Just to make sure you're really here, not lost in daydreams. Just once in a while, just check in. Okay. It's good for tonight. Stretch, comfortable. Okay, so non-thinking. It's kind of awareness that we're talking about. What are, I guess, like, just want to like open the floor. So what has been your experience of it? If not tonight, on other nights or other sittings, or is there something that you have just been finding difficult about trying to access the experience? Like, what's so, it's just like, let's just talk a little bit about this idea of non-thinking. John.
Your focus tonight sort of once again upset some ways I had about thinking about my practice. I have for a long time kind of assumed that focusing on the breath and other sense sensations were was a way of seeing the world more honestly, more accurately. And with I guess going along with the idea of thinking about the fragility or non-existence of the self, and this is a way to kind of see the world as it really is, rather than as our minds were making it. So right along, I've been thinking about all those, that sense awareness as being not just a tool to get perspective on my thoughts, but as a way of seeing the world in a more accurate way. I don't know whether you have any comments about that.
No, that's not at all inaccurate, John. I mean, yes, there is something very important and powerful about having a more textured, sort of visceral relationship with physical reality, right? Our senses and the things around. That's all important. And I think when I said what I said about it being merely a tool, I think I was maybe for rhetorical effect, maybe it's exaggerating, it's like instrumentality, you know. But what I said was also definitely still true, because that the until we can sort of turn, as it were, sort of the light backwards, like towards the self that is doing the experiencing, the perceiving, right? We're still going to see the world inevitably in a kind of filtered, distorted way, you know? So, both things are crucial. Both, I think, just having a more embodied, more sort of present experience of the world, but also getting clarity on who it is that's doing the perceiving. What is it that's actually doing the perceiving? You know, what is it that's cognizing? What is it that's feeling? You know, so both things are true. And also, one of the things that when we can experience non-thinking, as like Dogen was talking about, right? And we're not sort of being carried away by our thoughts. We're just sort of aware of them. The experience of that is not intellectual. The experience of that is profoundly embodied. You know, you're just much more in touch with the body, but also with the reality around you, because the thing that creates the sense of separation between self and other, that makes us feel like we're sort of like inside this sort of bag of skin, separate from the world outside us, is our identification with the ego, But when we can adopt this sort of form of awareness where we can just see thoughts and not be caught up by them, already that boundary between self and other becomes much more porous. It becomes it's so that's why the phrase that this is a different sort of verse that I like to quote from Dogen, and that you will have heard me have quoted before, John. But to study the Buddha way is to study the self. To study the self is to forget the self, and to forget the self is to be awakened by the 10,000 things, right? Which is everything, right, around us. And so it's all one process. Part of studying the self, which is what we're talking about here, is being less identified with it, forgetting the self. And that's what allows us to be like awakened by the miracle of the universe around us. So it's all of a piece. They're not really separate. We get more of that kind of presence you're talking about, the more we can relate to our mind, our thoughts, in the way that I was describing earlier. Does that make?
Well, I just want to make one more comment that I think is pertinent. I've had the experience a few times, once very strongly, where it felt as though focused mindfulness made me suddenly see the world very vividly, very intensely, and my reaction to that is, wow, this is really great. And I think that that in itself can be kind of a distraction, because I know it happens all the time that I say, well, if I just focus more intently, I can revive that kind of experience. And I think that you, a number of times you've talked about not trying to bring about a state of mind, and I know I'm certainly have been very guilty of the reverse of that, of trying intently, because it feels as though I'm doing it right and something's happening, so.
I think there are two things. One is that you're having experiences like that because you're practicing intently, right? It's like it is a sign that something's happening with your practice. But then the next step of the practice is actually to be aware of the thoughts of attachment, like, I want this experience more. And who's not going to have that desire when like the world seems like brighter and more vivid and more real, right? Like that's like I don't think there's a human being who's going to have that experience and not want more of it. And so then the issue is like, be aware of that process. That's part of what the mind does. It wants more of what's like pleasant. And then this sort of non-thinking is about, okay, so being aware, like, okay, I want more of this. And then you realize, okay, I'm approaching meditation as this kind of instrumental practice, like a technique to make an experience happen. Okay, there. And then you have to go through that for like a while. And then it starts to get just like, it sort of starts to like kind of wear down. And then the experiences come, the experiences go, and then you start to realize, oh, this is just in the nature of like experience. Like sometimes things will be vivid, sometimes things will feel like really like dull, and it's just part of the passing show. Yeah. Anything else that anyone would like to ask or say?
This is a technique that I use.
Hi, Richard. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you. I've been enjoying your sessions, I have to say. A technique that I've been using over the years is saying to myself that I am not my thoughts. This is a repetition I say to myself, and it gets me very quickly into my breathing posture being more profound, and serves as a transition in a lot of ways from the normal stream of endless monkey mind to something that's calmer, and with the understanding that I don't own them. There is no attachment to these thoughts. They just kind of exist separately from me, and that I have the ability to interface with them, but not be subsumed by them. And I just find that is easier for me to get into a more meditative, calm state by saying that to myself simply, I am not my thoughts. And it seems to work for me to create that separation. And then when I attach to some of my thoughts during that process, I go back to that. And then all is well. I'm not berating myself. And I guess I find the thoughts are less sticky that way.
I think, each of us through the course of this practice will find these, like, I like to call them moves, like these little kind of like things that we do that help us get into this kind of space, right? And I think that's a really interesting, like, sort of like move that you've just, that you've settled on. I recently heard someone say that they actually will say to themselves, thinking is happening. You know, it's a way of just sort of like relating to the thoughts as like sort of impersonal events, right? They're happening in consciousness rather than like, they're not my thoughts. They're just thinking is happening, you know? My teacher has sometimes suggested say like sort of say it thinks, you know, like it is thinking or something, you know, something like a little bit less personal. I mean, one way of thinking about like what all this Buddhist psychology is saying or encouraging us to do is to take ourselves and our minds less personally, right? It's like, you know, thinking is going to happen. Like as organisms, when we are alive, like thinking is going to happen. So it's not about stopping thinking. It's like, how can we relate to them as just events that would naturally happen in an organism of our type, right? That doesn't have to be things that we identify with as me or mine all the time. So anyway, I really like that. I like that suggestion. I think the thing is like people have to experiment and see what that works, you know, for them, I think.
Of course.
And also to make sure that's not just another thought you're trying to convince yourself of. It doesn't sound like that's like at all the case for you, but like, you know, am I just trying to talk myself into thinking like I'm not my thoughts, right? And is it something that really helps you truly adopt a different kind of attitude in the way that you were describing? Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. And thank you
of course.
Yeah, for speaking. It's nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you as well. Thank you.
Okay. So anyone have something they really would like to ask? I mean, I'm cognizant of the time. I don't want to hold people over, but if there's something that's just like you really would like to share, please do. Okay, good. So I'll see you guys next week, and have a wonderful week. All right. Okay. Bye, everybody. See you.
Once again, thank you so much, Bernie. It was so peaceful and good. Thank you.
Bye, Jean. Bye. Good night, everybody.